This episode was produced on the lands of the Gadigal people. We pay our respects to the elders past and present. Welcome to the snowsbest.com podcast, diving deep into the emotions and experiences that mountain life provides for skiers and boarders, from first-timers to elite athletes. With your host, Miss Snow-It-All, Rachel Oakes-Ash.
Trevor Kennison is a pro athlete, the first sit skier to complete a double backflip, and now the star of a profound film about human triumph and resilience in the face of adversity. Full Circle, a film by Josh Berman, recently won the grand prize at the Banff Mountain Film Competition, a massive honour in the outdoor world. For good reason. It's a raw and highly intimate film that blends Trevor's personal story with that of the famed Barry Corbett, who also suffered a spinal injury, and is the name behind the intrepid and terrifying 30-foot near-vertical Corbett's Couloir in Jackson Hole, where the film starts with Trevor hucking the couloir in a sit ski like a total beast. Talking to us today from the USA is Trevor. Welcome to the Snow's Best podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, Rachel. I really appreciate it.
I'm so excited that you're in the podcast with us today. That film is freaking awesome. It's absolutely amazing. What's the feedback you've been getting on it?
A lot of good feedback. And you know, that vulnerability part, you know, I was really nervous, but at the same time, it had to be done. And I've been getting great feedback from that. So that's awesome.
Well, you don't hold back. What makes you say it had to be done, the vulnerability part?
I guess it had to be done in the sense of not many people are informed of, you know, spinal cord injury or, you know, disabilities in general. Not many people ask questions. Bringing that wall down and making this story so relatable, but unrelatable, because everyone has to do these things. And, you know, people are just afraid to ask these questions. So I think we hit it right on the nose with all of those things. So
what we're talking about mainly is probably the bodily functions.
Yes.
The sex. How do you have sex? How do you go to the toilet? All of those things. You literally do not hold back on any of them. As you say, it makes it really human.
For sure.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely.
That's the feedback I've been getting, which is awesome. Josh did a great job putting it all together.
He's great. And I didn't realize that Josh was Zach Berman's brother.
Yeah.
Yeah. Small world. Zach is ex-Aspen and yeah, very funny. And then he was free skier editor. Yep. And yeah, it is a small world in the outdoor world, isn't it? To give some context to our listeners, 2014 changed your life. Talk us through what happened in the backcountry in Vail.
In 2014, I went out on Vail Pass, went with a couple buddies and ended up hiking, probably not far at all. You could see it from the parking lot. And I strapped in Goofy to my board and I hit a jump. My two friends hit it first. I hit it last, caught an edge right off the jump. I was flying through the air like a Superman and I tucked my neck. I didn't want to land on my neck. Landed like this, like a taco, and shattered T11, T12. And then the board came down like that. And I laid in the snow from 4 to 7:30 at night in a blizzard. And my friend Miguel, who I was with, he was like, come on, get up, man. And I was like, I can't get up. And I was like, he's like, come on, man, it's right there. And I was like, dude, I can't fucking move my legs. Sorry, I don't know if I can swear.
Oh, you can swear as much as you like. We're Australian.
Perfect. Those are the exact same words that I use as I can't fucking move my legs, man. And then he called the search and rescue, and those thoughts and like moments, you know, immediately after, I just didn't know what was happening or really understood. I injured the left side less than my right. So yep. I honestly thought I broke my hip or something like that, or, you know, cause I had a lot of nerve pain and just a lot of tingly sensation on the left side. I knew right away, but I was trying to be optimistic. And all I could think about in the time was my girlfriend at the time. I just moved into my apartment. I just got my own plumbing truck for my boss. You know, I was crushing in that sense. You know, all these things were going amazing. And I didn't even think about getting in a wheelchair. And I also thought about getting back on pain pills. So those were like my initial thoughts, like in the first like hour and a half. And then the last hour and a half was I heard a lot of snowmobiles going by me because of the cat track was right there.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh yeah, search and rescue's here. They're here. And they kept not being there and they kept coming in and then they would go. And so for me, my hopes were getting, you know, squashed every single minute. And, you know, I just told myself, just do not close your eyes like whatsoever. And I just remember looking up at one point and it was just snowing such big flakes and it was so bright out and it was just snowing so slowly. And I just remember like, all right, you know, it was like, I don't know, I think 6:37. And I just, another time was like, don't close my eyes. And then, you know, search and rescue got to me. But yeah, there was a point I didn't think I was going to make it out of there for sure.
Wow. We did a podcast recently with Alex Parsons, who got bitten by a brown mulga snake, which is one of the most deadly snakes in Australia.
And
And she got bitten at 9:30 at night. And there was no hope for rescue until for another 12 hours. Oh, and she talks about her 12 hours of what, and I was astounded at how she remembers so much minutiae of those 12 hours waiting to be rescued while she could potentially have died. And you obviously remember all that minutiae as well. So some people in that trauma just black out.
Yeah, I guess that's true. I never really thought about that, but I guess like in a pivotal moment, you know, I think mine or her moment, you know, you like think of, you know, all these checkpoints that you make it to get yourself out of there. Because mine was, you know, they got search and rescue got there. I remember it was the worst pain of my life. They lift me up. I was shivering so bad. I thought I was going to die from hypothermia.
Yeah.
But that's the thing. It was like the checkpoint of like lifting me and I screamed so loud. I've had 3 shoulder surgeries before my back surgery. And that was the worst pain I've ever felt. And then they lift me up into a toboggan, up into a sled, down to an ambulance.
Jesus.
So those were like definitely all those checkpoints. And then I got to Frisco, Colorado, and it was like, oh, here's your x-ray. And I kind of saw it and my back was 90 degrees into my stomach. And I just like looked at it and I was like, whoa, like, all right, like here we go. And so those like pivotal moments. And then I just remember like being in there in the ambulance, like right after it happened, they're like, all right, we got to cut off this shirt. I was like, this is my favorite shirt. No way. And so they cut it off and put like 10 blankets on. But then it's like, then I went to the hospital. My sister is there. And then I don't remember, I guess I blacked out much drugs. And I blacked out for like 10 o'clock at night, the drive till basically 6 o'clock in the morning, the next morning.
Yeah.
And what I remember next was, all right, you ready for this, Trevor? I look at the doc. I was like, let's do this. And, you know, I passed out and woke up. And the first thing I asked was like, oh, did you guys put my tattoo together good? You know, so it's, I think it's like these small checkpoints.
Yeah.
Of like having these like traumas that happen to you.
Yeah.
You know, you definitely black out, I'm sure. But at the same time, like, you're like, all right, well, this point led me to here. And then it's like, I'm here. Now I'm in the hospital. Put together, I'm still fucked up, but I'm still put together. And now I'm back on the mend. And then it's like, what's life from now? You know?
Is that how you got through your rehabilitation with checkpoints?
I would say, yeah, checkpoints or goals.
Goals, same thing, really.
Yeah, checkpoints or goals, you know, I think are very similar. But yeah, I think that helped me in the sense of like, because I was in the hospital for 5 weeks and I was like, all right, well, how can I learn how to take a shit? How can I learn to piss? How can I learn to drive a car? Get in an aisle chair to go down an airplane, you know? So all these things to just like live and learn life. I think it was just like these small checkpoints and goals. Yeah, that was kind of like my whole MO, honestly. And I think that's how I got out of the hospital as like quick and happy and not successful, but successful in a way that like Craig Hospital gave me all the tools to go live my life. And it's like, all right, we gave you this. What are you going to do with it?
At what point did you decide what you're going to do with it?
It took me a while. I mean, I had to move out of my place and then I lived in a hotel for 5 days. And then I rented this room in Walcott, Colorado, in the middle of Vail and Eagle, Colorado. And so it's like 30 minutes to each town. So for me, it was like, it sucks. You know, I paid all this money. I wasn't working. I was back on pain pills. I was on disability making $600 a month versus where I was a plumber making $3,000.
Yeah, that's a big change, isn't it?
Yeah. So just so much change in my life. And then just, you know, up and down with depression, trying to get off pain pills. Yeah.
Do they talk you through how to deal with depression? Did they help you with depression? Like, did they say to you, you're likely to become depressed when you leave here?
Man, I couldn't even tell you, because when I was in the hospital, I didn't really, you know, have much help. And I was on my own for the most part. My girlfriend was there. So, and I was pretty drugged up.
Yeah.
So I definitely retained a lot of information, but not all of it. I think for me, I don't know. They definitely, I had a counselor in the hospital, which is huge, but it's like, what happens when you leave the hospital? Your insurance runs out for PT, you know, just all this kind of stuff.
It's not surprising that because you had a drug issue before the accident and then you relapsed afterward. Do you think you relapsed because of depression?
I wouldn't say I relapsed.
Okay.
I guess I did relapse, but I think I needed to because my back was so messed up. Getting back on the pain pills, like I had to be on them, right?
Yep, absolutely.
So for me, like getting forced into relapse, you know, because I was clean for 2 years. I had 3 shoulder surgeries. I started taking pain pills when I was a freshman in high school and I sold weed. You know, I mean, I partied a bunch. So I started like taking those and then I got my first surgery and then took them a lot.
Yep.
And then kind of was just always around them. And then in junior year, I got into them again. You know, I started crushing and snorting them, you know, basically like my third surgery was like super, super bad. Like I couldn't even get through a day without even taking a bunch of pain pills.
Yep.
So it was scary in that sense, but I ended up quitting cold turkey, you know, another low point in my life, but ended up finding sport. That was like a way for me to find that outlet. So getting back on pain pills was so hard because I needed them. But then here's the thing. It was like, once I was like out of the back brace around like 5 to 6 weeks, then it was like, oh, okay. Yeah. My back's sore, but it's like, you're getting better. But I was still like taking them for until April. I remember coming down the highway from Eagle, Colorado to where I lived in Walcott, picked up 150 pills. And I remember taking a couple and I was just like, all right, this isn't me. And I just straight up threw them out of the door or out of the window, driving down the highway, went home and I hit really bad depression. You know, I think due to not taking the pain pills because of feeling the numbness of doing all the stuff that I couldn't do before. And then also, you know, just feeling sorry for myself. And I was numb to, you know, living life basically like after getting injured. So I think that was a huge transition for me. So basically April, I quit. I was doing good. And then end of April, I got my first UTI. I got 5 or 10 pain pills. I got 2 a day for 5 days. Not much compared to what I was taking.
Not 150.
At the end of that, I was just like, I remember it was like Thanksgiving time, actually. Not Thanksgiving time, but sorry. It was like springtime. So it was like warm. Went down to Denver. And hanging down there, and I was sick for 3 days. I was just puking. I just like, whoa, man, like, damn, I'm really hooked to these things. So after that, May and June, I went into like up and down depression. And for me, I ended up like moving home for on vacation for a couple weeks and had a blast. And I was familiar with my friends. It wasn't like I had like a good, not great support system, but in a way of like, everyone was working still. You know what I mean? It's like, I'm either leaving my girlfriend and I'm going to my friends, or I'm like just staying here with my girlfriend. What happens if she leaves me? You know? So I had all these things going through my mind and I ended up leaving my girlfriend or my ex-girlfriend, ended up moving back home. I was super happy for a couple months. I was really up and down there. I was drinking a lot, partying a lot. Still at there, I was living at my buddy's place, as you see Max Coombs in the movie.
Yes, yeah.
You know, I was 3 steps up, a flight of steps to get to the bathroom. So for me, it was like, yeah, free and familiar. But I just like, it was such a, not a step back, but it was just like, I had no clue what to do. Like, I didn't really have much else in Colorado, you know? I ended up going back and then ended up moving back to the mountains because I was basically like, what am I doing? And then so once I moved back to the mountains, my brother-in-law, my sister got me on the mountains. I tried rekindling my relationship with my ex-girlfriend.
That never works though, does it?
It was just like, just a lot of stuff happened. I was already like on my own of like sit skiing. When I started sit skiing, she like kind of didn't really want me to sit ski because to get injured, you know, like, I totally don't blame her, you know, I don't blame her one bit.
Yep.
And so I didn't see that side. All I saw was like, well, fuck this. Like, I'm not going to just wait around and walk, like, just to see if I can walk. Like, I want to go like do other things. So we didn't really see eye to eye. And I went on this week long Craig Hospital trip. And then that was kind of, we ended up breaking up after that trip. And that's when I kind of like fully took on sit skiing in the spring. Did that, loved it. Got like 20 something days in and then met High Fives, you know, that spring as well.
What's High Fives for everybody? Can you explain what that
is? Yeah. So High Fives Foundation is a nonprofit out of Truckee, California. They help athletes like myself that suffer life altering injuries doing actual mountain sports. And they help return you to living life and getting you back to doing sports. And it's such a cool thing that Roy Tustany has created. And I'm athlete 110. I think they're almost at athlete 100 or 700, which is incredible. So after that Craig Hospital trip, I ended up getting invited out there to Tahoe. Did a week long there. I got selected to go to nationals and ski racing. So I'm in back in, I got flown out to New Hampshire, sitting up at the top of the course, not knowing how to ski. And I'm just like, what the hell am I doing here? Like, why? You know, day 11, like, I can't do this. So it was just such a funny, like, thing how this whole thing came about.
And but you did really well at it.
No, I got DFL. Do you know what that is?
Did not finish.
No, dead fucking last.
Oh. I love it. See, but you finished it.
So I think I finished one of the races, but yeah, so I
but
did
very, they say, very don't they say in the film that you had a great future in this, but then you decided to drop it because you just wanted to do backcountry?
I did, but this is all in the spring.
This is the beginning. Is like day 10.
Yeah. Then I came back to Colorado and then I kept skiing. And then from there, High Fives sent me to this training foundation down in Texas.
Yeah.
And Johnny Wright was my guy. He is my trainer. And I had 3 shoulder surgeries. And for me, I was like, oh my God, what do I do with my life? And so I started skiing, went down that summer, and he was just like, I got you. And just got me on the ground, did all the shoulder and functional training, and he got me right. And wow. Between him and High Fives and that training, it mentally got me so strong.
Yeah.
And it helped with depression. It helped me get that confidence back. I would say 4 years ago, I started talking to someone, a mental sports coach, and that helped me once I started the career. But in the beginning, I think, you know, getting that confidence back and going to the gym and making sure my shoulders are good and I can live life to the fullest. I think the combination of those two foundations really, really sparked, just brought the best out of me.
So ensuring that you utilize what you do have to the best capability that you have.
Right.
Yeah,
for sure. And then, yeah, mentally, it helped me so much with sports and just being active. And then that following year, I started ski racing and I got 100 days in Aspen. And that's the start of my ski racing career.
And then you ditched it.
I did that for a year. The coach wanted me to quit. He ended up getting fired, but he didn't really come around too much. But long story short, he like didn't really want me on the team because he's like, oh, you're not taking it serious. I'm like, well, dude, like, if it snows, I'm going to go ski. So anyways, I ended up coming to Winter Park and I ski raced over here, Eric Peterson and Scott Olson. They helped me just in my ski race career of just maturing as a person off the snow and on the snow.
Yeah.
And for me, I loved it. But like at the same time, I had a passion for freestyle skiing. And I just kept like, did my ski racing 9 to 11 or 1 to 3 or whatever it was, watch video. And then sometimes I'd skip video because I'm like, oh, well, if we're going to watch, you know, ski from 9 to 11 and then watch video at 1 and it's snowing, I'm going to ski from 11 to 3 and go have fun. And I'll catch the film on Sprongo tonight.
Were you as good a snowboarder before your accident as you are a sit skier now?
It's perspective, because like I was a good snowboarder in the sense like I could ride the mountain very well. In the tricked aspect, no, I couldn't do tricks. I couldn't do a backflip able body. So I did ski racing for like 3 years and then ended up quitting it kind of ish. I didn't quit it. I still was within 2018-19 season. And then the 2019-20 season, I fully full quit and full on freestyle.
But when did you decide? Because I find this fascinating. Did you know that you were going to make a film, or were you just constantly putting everything onto GoPro anyway? Because the film didn't come about until later, did it? After you'd already done Corbett's. So you'd filmed all of that.
So I ended up quitting ski racing in 2019, 2020. Basically, when I approached Josh Berman in Level One about doing basically a small docuseries, Fat Tire was like on board, was like, all right, you want to go kayak, bike, ski? And I haven't kayaked or biked at the time. And if you see my videos from biking in like 2019 to 2022, or I went crazy on the bike. I've done incredible things on the bike that still like people haven't even touched, and I don't know if they will. But
they probably will now after the success of this film.
But it's funny, like you have to watch the bike stuff because no one knows I bike. It's so funny. But anyways, so going back to that, my whole proposal was let's go pull backflip in the backcountry where I broke my back. So it was like, you know, sat down, interviewed for 4 hours, great. But that like fall, I was going to continue to ski race and make this small, small docuseries, right?
Yeah.
And for me, I ended up talking to Roy. And he didn't say no. He didn't say yes. But the year before, he was like, no, keep ski racing. And then that year, like 2019, 2020, he was like, all right. So I was like, okay, sick. He didn't say no. He didn't say like, yeah, go do it. But he didn't like tell me, no, you don't do that. So I was like, all right, fuck yeah, I'm going to do this. And so I took it upon myself to like, this is what I want to do. And I'm going to go out here every day and get miles on and ski and practice and do this stuff without a coach or anything. And January 4th was me and Josh's first day of filming. And he didn't have any clue what to expect. I brought him in the backcountry. It's my first day in 5 years. And I went with a couple of buddies, Jackson, Ross, Burke. We all went backcountry on snowmobiles. They set up a jump, pull a backflip. I eat shit, get another ski. I clip in, go stomp it. And Berman, Josh is like, wow, no way. Like, can we do like a year or two project? And I was like, yeah, let's do it.
This episode is supported by The North Face. The North Face fundamental mission remains unchanged since 1966. Just provide the best gear for athletes and the modern day explorer, support the preservation of the outdoors, and inspire a global movement of exploration. Now, more than 55 years after its humble grand opening, The North Face delivers an extensive line of performance apparel, equipment, and footwear. They push the boundaries of innovation so that you can push the boundaries of exploration. So that's the day you decided to do the double, was it?
A month and a half later, February 20th of 2020, I did the double backflip.
No, but when did you decide? Like, when did you go, okay, I reckon I've got it in me to do this?
After that trip, we kind of, it was like, all right, let's go film here. Let's go. Let's do this. And it was kind of going to be like more action-based. And so we did the double. It was kind of like after Jackson Hole, we went in the backcountry and like, you know, I did Corbett's the year before and then I didn't do it that year. So I was like, fuck, that sucks. Like, I really want to do it. And all right, sick. So I kind of had a chip on my shoulder in the sense of like, all right, cool. Let's go out and like, let's go. I am a skier. I am an athlete. I'm not just an adaptive athlete. Like,
no,
I'm
you're an athlete
just like everyone else.
Yeah.
You know, so I was like, all right, let's do this. And yeah, we basically had this. Berman was like, yeah, I think Vail Pass is the place to do it. And I was like, I want to do it in Jackson. And we went up with Spriggs and Berman and it was like, all right, I think this is the spot. Like it could slide, but I think it slid already. Like we should be good to go. You know, there are risks, but at the same time, it snowed a bunch. And yeah, we all came to the decision as like, this is it. I sat there for 4 or 5 days watching them build the jump. And yeah, it was go time. And then literally we hit it, we stomp it. And then 2 weeks later, the world shuts down or 3 weeks later because of COVID. And then we found out through my good buddies, Greg Heidel, Jake Manley, who works at Craig Hospital, we found out all their stuff about Barry and all of his old archive footage and just his books. And then Berman kept reading about all this stuff. And then it became a much different story.
Much bigger story.
And then it was like, all right, how do we merge the stories without ruining both stories? And I think Josh did an amazing job.
No, he did a great job. Originally, I had no idea about that bit when I was watching it. I didn't realize that Barry Corbett was in it, right? And then I started watching it and I thought, oh, this will be interesting to see how this works. But at no point did I lose interest. At no point did I go, gosh, this makes no sense. The two stories are so quite different. They're actually very similar because they're both stories of adventure and they're both stories of the second parts of your life and what happens when you have to adapt to adversity in life. And it's relatable for everybody. Can I just say particularly you, Corbett's Couloir, because I don't know many people that go to the top of Corbett's and go, oh yeah, I can't wait to jump this. In fact, I know very few. I know very few. And every time I've gone, I've come up with some reason why the hell I'm not doing it. As if I was ever going to do it in the first place. So what the hell? I mean, that is, you just watch you launch into that. And I think, how the hell is that sit ski going to absorb that? Because you actually talk in the film about how your sit ski absorbs only a certain amount. And then traditionally people's knees absorb the rest, but you didn't have that. So the shot goes straight into your back.
Yeah. The whole Barry thing is just crazy to me because no one knew about this. Like Jackson Hole didn't know, like no one knew. So just finding out about all this is just incredible.
They didn't know about Harry having a spinal injury in the helicopter crash. Oh, wow. Okay. I didn't know until I watched the film either.
Well, that's the thing. Like, but even like Jess McMillan from Jackson Hole, who grew up, like been marketing forever there. Travis Rice, who grew up there, you know, legend. And it's like, they don't know, you know? So for some way or how, like it got lost.
Wow.
And so for me, like, I didn't have any film crew or anything going up to Corbett's Couloir.
No, like, you filmed it yourself.
No. So they had Jackson Hole. Like, we got all the footage from Jackson Hole. But all the stuff that you see with me in there, it's all a reenactment. So,
right.
Like, we go out there and, like, I reenact it and stuff. Yeah, like I said, I didn't know a single soul when I went and did this Corbett's. I went up there and I just knew I could do it. I watched a bunch of videos, did a lot of visualization. I went up there and it was like, oh, this kid's up here. What is he doing? Like, there's no way, like, he can do this. And my whole life, people are telling me, no, you can't do that. You can't do this. And it's like, all right, that's fine. I'll show you I can do it. You know, like, don't tell me I can't, because, like, I will tell you I can do something if I know I can't. If I don't try or, like, anything like that, you don't know. You know, you don't know someone's capability. And
were you like that before, though? Were you like that before the accident?
I imagine
you were like, don't tell me what to do. I imagine you probably had that part.
I'd say optimistic and positive and always, like, went with the flow. So I think for me, like, now being in a wheelchair and just, like, getting up to Corbett's, it's just, like, I worked so hard to, like, on the ski racing side as well as free skiing, putting in the time and effort and back end, try to get that invite. And then just the journey to get there. I don't know. It was just really... To look back on it, it is kind of wild that
it's crazy.
Showed up and actually did that. And
it's such a great part of the film. It's just absolutely wild, particularly for anyone that's been to Jackson. You're just like, holy shit, how's he going to do this? And I mean, we all know it's kind of like when you watch Free Solo. I know you're going to land it because I've seen it 1,000 times on social media. I know you're going to land it, but I'm still watching the film going, is he going to be able to do it? Is he going to be able to do it? It's the same as Alex Honnold, you know, in Free Solo. You're like, is he going to make it? It's like, yeah, you know he is. But so when you went back to Vail Pass, you did the double flip at Vail Pass. You didn't do it at Jackson.
No, we ended up starting filming January 4th.
Yeah.
A month later, we filmed at Vail Pass.
Was that a cleansing experience at all for, like, getting rid of demons from the day, those checkpoints? Do you remember the checkpoints when you were there?
I like how you say that. Cleansing my demons.
Your demons?
Yeah, without a doubt. I think that was just a very powerful and special part of my life and the movie. And besides the movie part, in my life, it was such a powerful moment just to know that the spot that took so much away from me, you know, I can go back and get closure. And also, it's not like I'm not swearing at that spot. I'm very grateful and for that spot, because without that spot or, like, that day, like, I wouldn't have been able to accomplish this or meet all the amazing people along the way that has helped me get to where I'm at. And so I wouldn't change it for the world. And my mom was out there. My sister was out there. You know, I straight up cried after the first one.
That was so beautiful.
That day was just super special. My buddy, Matty Marks, who couldn't be there that day, he had a coach that day. He literally told me, man, he's like, yeah, dude, like, a lot of the homies are like, yeah, you could see the jump from the highway. And he's like, yeah, did you do it today? Did you do it? He's like, you could feel something in the air today. I don't know what it was, but you could just feel that, like, that magic. You know, after I landed and I talked to him and he told me all this stuff, you could just feel it kind of just, like, radiating, like, through the homies. And yeah, it was such a special day.
It radiates through the lens of that film. It really does. I think that's why it's so special, because we're all there gunning for you at the same time. I mean, it's a very personal, you know, your family are there, your mum and your sister, and you're crying, and the pure glee of the sound that comes out of you on the GoPro is just, it's just, if you could bottle that, that's joy right there. That's joy, accomplishment, all of those moments.
Without a doubt.
So what are you doing now during this experience of doing the film? And what are we now, seven, can't even count, you're 10 years since your accident next year.
Next year,
Yeah. 9 years. Do you still suffer with depression? Do you have new ways to deal with that? What do you do?
I don't even know if, like, everyone deals with it, but I'd say, like, everyone might deal with it in some way. And I think mental health is so important. Like, I don't care who you are.
Yep.
Yeah, I think that's, like, super important. But, you know, I think talking to someone is extremely helpful. Exercise, super, super helpful.
Yep.
You shouldn't be too hard on yourself. I think everyone's their worst critic.
Yes, we are.
And it's okay to, like, have a day to yourself and recover. And
I do feel that in the mountains, there's the highs and the lows, though. And I think that we experience the highs and the lows so much more intensely when we are mountain people. The joy is so great. But when the season finishes, there's no more snow. So there's a natural low there anyway. But if your entire life revolved around the snow, that low can sometimes seep into depression, but it's more about understanding the ups and downs and figuring out when it's different.
It's really funny. I was talking about this with my girlfriend yesterday. Honestly, it's, you know, it's that time of year and it's the shoulder season, and you know, like being based off of your career, whoever's career, like off of a season, right?
Yep.
And for me, like I continue and I always will continue to love skiing, and I always do it at a very, like, think if it's casual, do it at a high level, but it's more so I love it, but like, I love those change of seasons. And yeah, the shoulder seasons in mountain towns are very tough because it's like, you can't ski, you can't bike. What do you do? You know, so it's like working on like, what have I learned is like being patient, you know, and I think I continue to like have a tough time and continue to learn to work on that and be patient. Cause like, you know, I think being patient, you know, you can learn so much from that. And like, it's like, all right, well, the season will get here. Like, just look at it in a different way, like being positive versus negative.
Reframing it. Because the patience is interesting, because patience requires you to be able to sit with discomfort. And I think skiers and snowboarders find it very difficult to sit with discomfort because we're constantly chasing the adrenals. We're constantly chasing the adrenaline. So when we get, if it's winter and we're in discomfort, we might go skiing rather than just sitting with the general discomfort of life that we're not taught from when we're little is a part of normal life.
I think for me, like, what am I doing now? You know, working on the film or like all the film theatrical release, all that stuff. Like, that's awesome, putting everything I have in there. But also, it's, you know, I think it's super important for me. Like, I get beat up, or anyone that skis over 100 days a season gets beat up. And you're just like, all right, I need to take, like, once May hits June, I'm like, nope, I don't want to ski. I don't want to see snow. I just want to, like, bike. I want to go camp. Relax, enjoy the warm weather, whether it's going to a ball game or traveling or whatever it is, like really taking that time and like for yourself and recovery and like taking the other things in, you know, because I don't want to just be so dependent on like, oh, I have to go ski 10 months out of the year. If I'm not, I'm so miserable. And learning to like really like see what's out there other than just skiing, because I will always ski. Are you kidding me? I love skiing. Do it till I die. But that's the thing. It's like, there's other things out there, you know what I mean? Like that are hobbies and passions and interests. And
connections with people as well.
Yeah, exactly.
You've just been to Australia, which is kind of exciting. You came to see us in probably the worst season we've had ever. I saw that you were down at Threadbar. I was like, oh no. And then you went to Mount Buller and I'm like, no, it's the worst season.
It was incredibly bad. The hospitality was incredibly good. The food is incredibly good.
Yep.
My girlfriend's gluten-free, and I swear, I don't care if it's a dive bar, and you're like, hey, can I get a burger?
Yeah.
You're like, can I get gluten-free bun? And they're like, yeah, we got that.
Yeah, we got that.
I was like, no way.
Yeah, gluten-free, no problem. What's your girlfriend's association with Australian skiing?
She was a mogul coach down there at Perisher.
So she's coaching future Olympians, because we're very good at moguls, Australians.
You guys are very good at moguls. Yeah. Yeah, Jakari Anthony.
And Matt?
My girlfriend is like good friends with her.
Oh, that's awesome.
So she like grew up competing like with her as well, and then ended up quitting like during college. Long story short, we're in Mount Bula and she was just like, oh, look, take a picture with me. And like it was Jakar with a 6-panel spread.
Yeah, I know. Amazing, hey?
It's like super awesome. And then we ran into Jakar as well. But
fantastic.
Yeah, it's super, super cool just to like see that. Because I didn't grow up like competing able-bodied ski racing or freestyle or anything like that. So it's really cool to like, you know, I do my pro freestyle stuff now. But it's really cool to see like, you know, and I did ski racing as well. But it's cool to see the able-bodied like side of moguls, because I never did moguls. I love skiing moguls, but like, that side is really, really cool to see. And each discipline is, I think, just really cool to see. And especially with what my girlfriend does, you know, like giving back to like the next generation. You know, I always talk about
it. Was that her first season in Australia?
Yeah, that was her first season down there.
Oh, no. She's coming back next year?
Well, here's the thing. The snow is whatever. You know, I grew up on the East Coast.
Oh, you're fine like, then. You're fine then.
And like, that's what I got like gathered. People love it no matter the conditions. People are stoked, just like the East Coast. They're going to go out and they're going to go ride rain, sunshine, snow, ice. They're going to go have fun.
Yeah, true. You stayed at Sargood. Can you tell us a bit about that? Because that's quite, like, that's on the northern beaches and it's a super lush, luxe resort. Tell us about it.
Man, Sargood, it's, I want to say it's the first and only spinal cord injury rehab that's not like a part of a hospital. And they have 17 fully accessible rooms.
That's right on the beach.
Literally go down the elevator, not even cross the street. You get on the sidewalk, you're at the beach. Snorkel, you can get beach chairs. Like I was complaining to my girlfriend. I was like, oh yeah, I can't get on the beach and walk with you. Well, 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 you know, like poor me. Sebastian over there, he was like, oh no, no mate. Like we got one, you can go out right now. I was like, wait, for real? So girlfriend's like, oh yeah, you're going to get on one of them one day, I swear. And that same day I got on one. So like I got on the beach and walked around with her, got on the coral.
The reef.
Tide pools and stuff. So,
Yeah.
So for me, that.
Also the little, so you had those big four-wheel drive kind of tires that could get you up over the rocks. Oh, fantastic.
Exactly. So like access that. Man, it was just so incredible. Just from the rooms to the staff downstairs, Amy and crew run a program down there. It's all adaptive equipment. It's so incredible. Yeah, we ended up staying. I think we were going to stay for 4 or 5 days. We ended up staying for a week. Loved it. We showed the movie there. Everyone was so stoked. It was just to see something like that was incredible to me. And then I talking to all the, you know, disabled people in Australia, they were telling me, they're like, oh yeah, you get 28 days here if you're an Australian citizen and you have a spinal cord injury. And I was blown away. It was just so cool for me to see something like that.
That's
to be used and utilized and for them to like really care about the, you know, disabled community. I think that's very incredible.
Yeah, well, maybe High Five can do something with it.
Well, that's the thing. It's like High Fives is so big, right? But like, it's really cool because is it Disabled Sports?
DWA Australia.
DWA, yes. Yep. And that's through Australia and through the governing body through them. Yep. So I think it's very, really cool like how Australia really, really takes to their people with disabilities.
We're a sport obsessed nation. So
I love that. Like, that's what me and Kelly.
Yep.
Like you're Olympian down there, like you're God. You know, and like you're Olympian like around in like the America. It's like, oh, who are you? You know? It's like,
yeah, but you got a lot more Olympians than we do. You got a lot more. So you got a lot more.
But you get what I'm saying. It's such a different culture is. Though. You know, it's like seeing that firsthand for myself, it was very, very cool and eye-opening just to see, you know, how different cultures and different countries work and stuff.
Okay, so if people want to follow you or check out your website or support any of the organizations you're involved with, how do they do that?
You can go to fullcirclefilm.co and you can see all the screenings and anything that is coming out about the film, anything up to date. You can follow me on Instagram, Trevor Kennison. My website, it's either level1.com or it's sitskiboss.com. And that will take you to all the merchandise to get some swag.
Love that swag.
And then highfivesfoundation.org. Go to their website. You can donate, support people like me. They are awesome and they'll send you out some cool swag. I always say like after breaking your back, you know, High Fives is the best sponsor to have. they take care of you and I have so much love for them over there and everyone else that's helped me along the way.
So what's next for you? You've done the double backflip. What's your next goal?
Maybe a triple backflip, aka I want to do a full urban part. Okay. So I think we're going to do a 2-year project doing urban.
And is that going to be a film as well?
I don't know if it's going to be like this year. I try to get my feet wet and understand how the whole process goes.
Yeah.
And then the following year, next year, I dive into it full on and I do like my own project and I hire a bunch of people to help me get it done. Yeah, that's going to be a film, just action film. I literally might say one word and no more. I don't have to do, you know, any like tell my story.
You did a bit of urban stuff in this film. You did it like miles and
I did. So my whole goal is to do like a full on heli part and a full on urban part.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah.
Have you gone heli skiing before?
Yeah. So in the movie, I went like 4 times.
In the movie? Oh, yeah, you did. Oh, my God. You were with CMH. Yeah. And when you jumped out, because I've gone with CMH a lot of times. I've been very, very privileged to do that. And when you when you took that first run down and you're like, woo, and I just thought, oh, my God, that sound is so familiar. It's so familiar. Yeah. It's the same. Like, everybody is connected by that sound because they remember the first time they've done that and it's freaking awesome.
You hit it right on the dot.
Yeah, absolutely. If you could bottle that sound. I can't make the sound you did after your double backflip, but I can certainly make the heli skiing sound. So Trevor Kennison, thank you so much for being on our podcast. It's an absolute delight to have you here. And we look forward to seeing you again, hopefully in person in North America.
Yeah, thank you so much. Have a great day or great night. And thank you again for having me on.
Thanks for listening to the Snow's Best Podcast. If you like what you hear, be sure to review and subscribe via your favorite podcast platform. Like at Miss Snow It All on socials and hit up the snowisbest.com website for everything you need to know snow.